Okay, it's a couple minutes before 1, and I'm testing the levels. I'm going to start the archiving. And to check that indeed we are broadcasting. Great. So, welcome to Radio Free Erica. It is 1 minute before 1 o'clock, and I'm just going to wait until now to say again, welcome to Radio Free Erica. I can't believe this is actually up and running. I kind of want to talk a little bit about the process that it took to get to this point. It took a lot of minds coming together and some software and some digging deep into the bowels of my laptop and reconfiguring routers, ports, other words that I didn't know what they meant before today. And so to do all of this configuring, I took phone calls and some other people's gifts of time, mostly Xenia. And Xenia just wanted to say thank you so much for your tireless efforts in getting this to happen. I also wanted to thank Mark for organizing the exhibition and being a cheerleader of the radio idea and program. And I wanted to thank Diane and Tom for checking in and offering advice and allowing some of the first recordings to happen with them, doing research, and again being cheerleaders of the idea. I would like to thank Carol for watching my son Dove right now while Mark is installing the exhibition and I am sitting in his soon-to-be room broadcasting. Without some childcare support, I wouldn't be able to do this for sure. So thank you, Carol. So now to talk a little bit about the room that I'm sitting in. It's a room in our apartment that was built out last year from open eaves and sort of nothingness. And it's been in a constant state of, like, manufacture ever since then. We slept in it for a while. It was sort of a studio space when I was pregnant for a while. But it was always the intention that our son, Dove, would eventually be in here. And he was in here for a little while, and then just recently he moved back in the room with us so that we could open up another window in the space and finish off, like, a lot of the moldings and things. And so the room is vast and empty. You might be able to tell from the way the sound sounds to you. And there's a skylight, so I'm getting some sunshine, and then the new window that was built out too is actually just some cuts right now in the steel siding of the building, and so it's open. It's just open. There isn't any actual glass window. Those will happen in a couple weeks, I hope, within a couple weeks. But so it's this beautiful empty space with light, and it feels right now, decadent. This big room in which to broadcast. And I guess I feel like I wanted to describe it because I am a visual artist coming to doing this sound project, and which is this radio project. And I kind of came to doing this project out of a frustration with making images, feeling like some major sense of responsibility in the world right now as an American, as an artist, cultural worker, thinker, parent, citizen of the planet, and in images felt impossible for me to kind of shuffle and manage all of these things, these thoughts. And really that management is happening within my community and within discussion and reading and listening to other people's ideas and sort of educating myself. And so that's part of how it came to deciding to do this radio project and wanting to feel like, again, wanting to feel outside of, potentially outside of a gallery space, but also to function within the tools that I know, which is the art world, in so kind of communicating within and without, outside of that. And so the internet seemed like an appropriate way to work with that. And when I think of the most affecting images that I've seen, perhaps ever, but certainly within the last few years, it's the images that came out of Abu Ghraib. And then the images that I've been sort of seeking out from the war in Iraq, but primarily those images of Abu Ghraib because they made me feel responsible in a way that I hadn't before, and I think many people felt similarly. And so to even think about making images it was overwhelming, because those images are what am I trying to say? They function like their intent was totally different. The preconception within them is totally different than the way I'm trained in making images. And anyhow, it took me to the sound idea. And I know that there's something else that it was the booth, the story booth in Grand Central Station also that I've been trying to get an amazing woman I know, friend Mary Adams, who we're going to speak to later on today. I'm going to speak to later on today. But wanting to interview her and wanting to start collecting people's stories, and that was something that had been kind of stewing around in my head, this idea of oral histories, which is linked directly to my visual work. But so this sort of like a flat-footed approach to just wanting to start generating some oral histories. So that brought me to Radio Free Erica. And the time Radio Free Erica came from when I was a kid. I used to, instead of pledging allegiance, I don't know if my kid's not big enough for me to know this yet, but I don't know if kids are still required to pledge allegiance to the flag at school, but when we were pledging allegiance, I used to pledge allegiance to the United States of America, not out of any sort of anything except being perhaps cantankerous. So it just seemed like the name to use. So I have some fabulous software here that I'm using to broadcast, but it only allows me to either broadcast through a line in or through a program. So I can't do nice smooth transitions, in that I can't play some music while I make my phone call to then get the next person in. So what I have to do is I'm going to give you some blank space while I try calling our first person who we're going to have online, which is Carla Rapiz. She's an artist in the Watch What We Say exhibition. So hey, Carla, it's Erica.
Hi, Erica.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay. I'm kind of hooked up to a bunch of wires, and we're on. Yeah. How's it going over there?
It's going well.
Okay. I guess I should say, Carla's at the gallery space at Schroeder Romero, where the Watch What We Say exhibition is opening tomorrow night, and she's part of the installation crew. And so you're working on your piece right now?
Back to our carpenter friend. For all those listening.
That's cool. So did he bring the baby?
Yeah, he did, actually.
Yeah.
And we had to put her in the bathroom and close the door when we were, cutting and sawing, because she didn't like the sounds of the hard drills going off in the power tools. Yeah. So when did Free Erica launch?
When does it launch?
Yeah, when did it launch? Did it just launch right now, or has
pretty
it been
much, yeah, pretty much right now. I mean, 1 o'clock started the live broadcast. I've been, playing Puff the Magic Dragon over and over again just to give something on there. But, I started at 1 and gave a monologue about why I started, which I think was sort of clear. And then now I'm calling you. Because I want to hear about your piece. And your performances in relation to it.
Okay. So the piece is called Bodies on Support. And it's going to be about I think everyone should just come down to the space and check it out if you can.
wait, speak up, because for some reason I'm not hearing you so great.
Okay, I'm going to go walk by the window.
Okay.
Maybe it's my reception from inside that little room. The piece is called Bodies in Space.
Uh-huh.
Bodies on Support. And like I said, it's about a 5-foot stack of fabrics that are just being really unfolded and just laying along the front of the platform of the wagon, and the platform's at 45. So the stack of fabrics feels like it's falling forward ever so slightly. And it feels as if it's like a rickshaw. It's built like it's a rickshaw, so it's meant to be pulled by a human, even though the wheels are wheels that were used by a horse-drawn cart. I mean, this wagon is really meant to be pulled by humans, and, you know, I think it is a metaphor for labor and work.
And so will you actually be doing some pulling of it?
This piece is gonna rest here at the gallery at Schroeder Romero.
Uh-huh.
But the performance, which is gonna be on August 31st at noon in the Financial District downtown in New York, I'm going to have shopping carts, you know, like the shopping carts that we carry our groceries in.
Uh-huh.
Not at the supermarkets, but like the kind that, you know, ordinary people own, like grannies, and we take our water and, you know, and our food and carry them to our apartments.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm going to have seven people towing, pulling these shopping carts filled with things that I regard, or that people that I've been asking regard as important, what's important, like main staples.
Uh-huh.
And these items are going to be, you know, towed around the country. This is like, we just got on.
Yeah.
And do we have an audience?
Well, I'm too scared to look. I'll tell you after. But I'm just testing here because sometimes I can hear you better and sometimes I can't.
Right.
So I think your piece is really exciting. I mean, I think it's really exciting that you're doing both something on the street and that you're doing something in the gallery space, and that you're involving groups of people, and, you know, I guess there's specific things that I'm interested in about it too, but I just, like, am curious also to hear about, like, your process, like, how you got from when we were talking a few months ago and you were interviewing immigrants and you were talking
mm-hmm.
about that, and then to, like, what you're doing now.
Right. Well, I think the cart it's mobile, and it's something that I was thinking about stemming from, like, our forefathers and from ancestry. I mean, the wheel is, like, you know, the beginning of time, and transportation and migration and contemporary flights of immigrants. And my parents migrated here from southern Italy, so that's always something that I brought with me. And the fabric, I mean, both my parents worked in the garment industry, like, they were tailors, and that still is what they brought with them to this country. When they came, and that's how they found their work. So I think, and when I was interviewing people, I was basically interviewing people and asking them, what did you bring with you and what did you leave behind? And more specifically, the feeling of, like, you know, entering into that new place, and what was the journey like? And most people just said that, like, you know, they left behind, like, this one woman said to me that she had left behind, like, everything, like, her family. And she had brought with her her skill and desire to work and to make money. And so these audio clips are not, I haven't edited them or spliced them or integrated them into a sculpture or a performance yet, but they are something that have informed, you know, this piece as a feeling. And the fabric, like laying the fabric down, you know, it feels like, you know, it does feel like a body, like it has its own.
Are you smoking or something?
No.
Oh, you keep fading in and out. Like, are you?
No. Did I go outside?
No, it's just that, like, you're moving your head away from the mouthpiece or something.
Oh.
There you go. That's beautiful.
I have my hands-free device on.
Oh, cool. Okay.
But maybe I will try.
No, don't do that, because it's better. We don't. Get a headache. I don't know. I don't want you to get cancer to talk on the radio station.
I'm not too afraid of that.
We should broadcast some of those.
In a lot of other ways.
Yeah, I know. Well, well, I was going to say, we should broadcast some of those interviews if you'd like.
Yeah.
Sure.
During this week. I mean, I don't know if you talk to people, if you think they would mind or whatever, but it'd be nice.
No, I mean, everyone that I've spoken to, they said that they would feel fine.
Okay.
About using their story publicly.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm. I could do that. I'm just going. I'm climbing down the stairs. I think it might be better outside.
So the carts are also something that you've been talking about, I mean, for a couple years now. I mean, you did the piece with the goat. And
the piece with the goat, for all those listeners, in case there are any, the piece with the goat was in response to the September 11th and part of an exhibition, part of two exhibitions. And I was reading J.M. Coetzee's book, The Strength, and in it he was talking about the scapegoat and how the ancient, I think I told you the story, how the ancient Romans would pile on, like, the sins of the people of, you know, of Rome, and then they would drive the sins and drive the goat out of the walls of the city, so as to cleanse the city. And then I thought, well, you know, maybe, like, load up, like, the painter that some people might be feeling, like, onto the goat and then drive the goat out of the city.
Like,
so that goat was on a wagon because I wanted to transport it downtown, so I made a sculpture of a goat, and then I put it on, like, a radio flyer wagon and carted it all around downtown.
And you allowed people to put things onto the goat.
Totally.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, during that time, I mean, people were really responsive, and through just flowers and a lot of money was placed on the goat, and that all went to, like, you know, the Tides 9/11 fund and pictures, and it just kind of became more of a symbol of, like, the many shrines that went up during that period. So that was my first cart. That is true.
And so then what's been in between, or has there... Whoa. You okay?
I'm fine. It's a man with a forklift. It's Brooklyn.
So have there been carts in between, or how do you get...
Not too many cardboard ones, more like toys just kicking around my studio. I've been trying to teach myself, because I bought that cart, so I've been trying to teach myself how to make a cart, and so last summer I started making some out of cardboard with, like, dowel rods and chicken wire and scotch tape and hot glue guns and, you know, sort of understanding how wheels rotate, and so that's what I've been doing, and thinking about what all the different kind of carts I could make, that the cart being like a platform or a base, and then being able to talk about various things with that.
Right. And you made one with a group of kids, right, at one of the schools where you teach?
Totally, yeah, with DreamYard. A fabulous organization. I made
a little shout out to DreamYard.
DreamYard.com. Yeah, at PS 306 up in the Bronx, my second graders, we made a cart about times when we felt accepted and times when we didn't feel accepted. And then the kids made this cart and placed all their stories and poems and things on top of the cart. And then the cart, you know, was exhibited, and then they had kind of like a little poetry presentation for, you know, for part of the school.
That's so great.
Yeah.
And how'd the kids, I mean, how did other kids who didn't participate respond? How did parents respond?
Yeah, well, the other kids, I mean, whenever we have DreamYard sharings, all the kids that are, you know, in the audience and watching, they just, you know, they just love it. And the response was, you know, was good, you know, like, well, I remember this little girl, Binta, she said, you know, the time I didn't feel accepted was when I was in Coney Island with my mom, and I really wanted to go on the roller coaster, but I couldn't because I was too small.
Oh.
For the roller coaster. And then a time that someone did feel accepted was, like, at their younger sister's birthday, because everybody was there, and they got to help, like, cut the cake, and, you know, those simple moments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what have you been thinking about then? Like, what, I mean, I know you've been painting, I mean, like, what do you feel like you keep coming back to when you're in the studio, or just, like, in general, when you're, like, walking down the street? Like, the same things that you must come back to in your studio, but, like, what's going around for you?
Well, you know, I keep seeing people towing these parts around, you know, like, it's so strange. Like, once I started, like, putting the parts together and, I purchased those, like, you know, those shopping carts that you just get, like, in Chinatown, you know, what's been catching my eye, or what I've been attracted to, is watching people sort of, like, moving on the street and what they're carrying with them.
Uh-huh.
And how we all, you know, how we're all carrying it and how we're all a part of that.
Especially in New York. I mean, you carry your entire day with you.
Yeah, but even, like, you travel 2 hours outside of New York and the whole world still works that way. I mean, people are still plowing the land and,
right.
And, you know, and farmers, and, you know, you see the rickshaw out there with the plow in the back, and, you know, it's like as advanced as we get and as technology, like, evolves, or, you know, like, we're on cell phones and we're on the internet live, you know, and all of this sort of crazy stuff. You know, I don't know, I went up to the Captain's of Paco, and you just look around and it's just all trees and you just see people living this way.
Right.
And city life can just kind of appear to be fast or advanced or living a certain way, but I don't know, it's like the cart, it's like it feels like it's old or like early pioneers. I think it's the forefathers and early pioneers, but then I think, like, oh right, we all still live this way. We still, like, tow this stuff.
Yeah.
And we're all carrying it.
Cool. It's exciting.
I hope I'm being interesting.
No, it's exciting.
I'm just folding up my fabric.
No, it's exciting to think about. Like, it's exciting to hear inside your head a little bit. You know, like it sounds right that you're thinking about ancient or older technologies.
Yeah. Yeah, and the fabrics on top of the platform, on top of the wagon, you know, they do feel, you know, it's like blocks of color, you know, it feels like constructed, and it feels like a square of fabric, you know, and all these blocks of color, and it has like a formal, someone from the gallery says hi,
uh-huh.
A formality, but, and yet like a structure, and yet like a softness to it, it's all cloth.
Uh-huh. So it's
a rigidity, and
it's pretty colorful. The
mm-hmm. Oh, totally. It looks like a quilt, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's like a crazy, not crazy, but it looks like a quilt, like a pattern, like a giant pattern.
Cool. Oh, everybody heard that I just got a new email.
What is it?
Oh, no, I don't know. I just got a ding that there's email coming in. It's funny, like, doing this the first time, I don't really know what's going to broadcast, what's not. So.
Oh, right, so it may not be working or something. Hi. Is Mom listening out in California?
My mom doesn't really get on the internet very often, but she could be listening with my father if he, like, you know, if he organized the whole thing.
And what's Doug doing?
He's with Carol. I already was, like, that was, like, the first thing I wanted to say when I got on here because, you know, I couldn't be doing this if it wasn't for her, you know? Like,
mm-hmm.
It's, like, so important, like, that somebody's taking care of.
Yeah, your baby. And totally,
yeah.
And it's, like, I couldn't build my cart without Zach coming, and then my friend Mark is, like, you know, getting up with, you know, at 7:30, like, rented the van, got over here, helped me put it together, and, you know, it's a total, like, you know,
the community.
Multiple parts. Yeah, completely.
I know. I mean, I feel like it's sad that isn't, I don't know about sad, but it feels like I wish that was acknowledged more in work in general, like, that it's not about.
Well, we always work that way. I mean, that's why I like your radio thing.
But, I mean, you know, just in general, like, that there isn't, like, you don't understand the production that's behind, like, the persona. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I guess maybe it's not practical or something, but anyhow, sometimes I find it sad. Because it is, it's, like, it's so amazing, community and just, like, the power of groups of people. And I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of kind of amazing what's going on in New York right now, like, speaking of the power of groups of people, and, just, like, I don't know how many emails you are getting, but, like, on a daily basis, I'm getting emails for, like, fundraising parties, for everything from the Democrats to move on to, you know, things, anything to get Bush out of office parties, you know, and, to, like, different kinds
we
of
want him out.
I know.
Let our agenda be clear.
Exactly. I mean, it's kind of amazing how many exhibitions are happening. I mean, it's totally exciting. Like, the energy is so exciting right now.
Yeah, it really is. Yep.
Well,
we'll be able to relax a little and maybe enjoy our opening.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's great to get a description of your piece.
Oh, right, thank you.
And to hear sort of, like,
thanks
what you've been
asking.
Thinking about. Well, yeah. I'm going to keep asking. So, is there any, like, I guess this is, like, the teacher question in me, but is there, like, are there other artists or other things that you're looking to these days that are kind of visual references or conceptual references that feel really important to you right now? I mean, obviously, like, the political climate, but, like, within that or without outside of that.
You mean visual artists or, like, what I'm attracted to?
Yeah.
Honestly, I like Cornelia Parker's work a lot. I've been looking at her quite a bit, and Mauricio Catalan, but I don't know, like, I really enjoy teaching and working with the community, people that I work with, and just talking with people like you and all my friends, and I don't know, I feel like I really get my, a large part of my ideas or creativity from interacting in the world with people, like, just working with people.
I
do like to read, but I don't know, like, I think I there's a bit of, like, I'm not going to get into it. I'm not going to get into art criticism or anything like that. But, yeah, I would say that I get a lot of my influence from interacting with people on an everyday level. That's what influences me most. You know, talking to my mom or stories from my dad or hearing my students tell their stories. Yeah. Did I lose you?
No, not at all. No, I was just thinking, like, it's really great to hear. I'm glad I asked that question. I was feeling like it was too much of a teacher question, but I'm glad I asked it because it seems obvious, but not until you say it. And there's so much of your kids in your work, like, that you teach.
I think so. I think I've learned a lot from actually teaching and just sort of, like, simplifying a bit and letting a little bit, playing more in my studio, you know, like, that it's just creativity and not emphasizing too much of, like, God, what the hell are people going to think of this? And, you know, does this fit the mold of, like, you know, what's going on in the contemporary art world or in that, you know, bubble? Or, of course, like, you know, I go to the Biennales and I look at all of that work and I like, you know, and I like a large part of it and I like that dialogue. But working with kids, I think, has, like, really kind of taught me to play in the studio. And maybe take things a little less seriously and yet be serious.
Yeah.
Just be a little hilarious.
Be a little hilarious. Exactly.
Yeah.
Be a little hilarious. Right. Just lay it on out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Hi, puppy.
Oh, Carla, I love you. Thank you so much.
Love you too, Erica.
And so maybe I'll see you later this afternoon.
Okay, you're going to come by?
It depends. Depends on the mood of a small person in my life. And
okay, we'll give a big kiss to him.
Yeah, I will.
That little guy.
And good luck to all of you over there doing the installation. A little shout out for the installation crew at Schroeder Romero.
Okay, and I might actually dive into your stack of fabrics in your, like, plastic bins?
Oh, yeah, please do.
Because I need, like, a couple more inches.
Oh, no, that's a great, I'd be very happy if it was on there.
Yes, Mark said that he said that.
Yes, okay, cool.
Okay.
All right, so.
You stay waiting for Erica.
Yeah, hey, thanks for being the first.
All right, I'm the first.
You're the first. You're my first, Carla. All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye.
I'm sorry if I just blasted anybody out. I'm totally trying to figure out the tone control. I'm sound lady, talk lady, coffee drinking lady. Oh, it's the telephone. I think I'm going to answer it. We'll see who's on it. But I need to call Wade. Wade, if you're listening, I'm going to call you in a minute.
Hello, you're on Radio Free Erica.
Hey, Erica, it's Diane.
Hi, Diane.
Hi. I just was calling you to tell you the volume needs to be higher, and then all of a sudden it just went blasting.
Oh, yes. I know, because I don't really know what I'm doing yet.
So you're still having a problem with volume when you're doing a phone interview?
Well, I think I turned off my mic, and how was her sound? How was Carla's sound?
Both were really low.
Were really low. All right, I got to figure out how to boost the incoming sound.
Yeah, I guess, because I had my volume all the way up, and then as soon as she hung up, I guess, it was really, really loud.
Okay.
Loud and clear. But otherwise, amazing.
Okay, cool.
Okay, I'll let you get back to business.
Hey, Diane.
What?
Thank you so much for helping out here.
Oh, well, you know, it's totally, I mean, for me, it's nothing. It's just a phone call. You're doing all the work.
Oh, whatever. Okay, I'm going to talk to you soon.
I'm sure you have things lined up. I'll let you go.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Love you, bye. All right, Wade. We're going to get his commute. Wade works on 27th Street. And he rides his bike in various different commuting patterns. And I'm going to call and hear about what's going on with his commute today. From Greenpoint, Brooklyn. So, I'm sorry if his levels are low. I'm trying to figure this out.
Hello.
Hey, Wade, it's Erica.
Oh, I thought you were calling my other phone, so I was about to step in.
I am.
Oh, no, this is my cell phone.
Oh, you want me to call the other line? I thought I was supposed to call you on your cell.
No, you're right. I thought we miscommunicated, so I was about to go in. But no, you're right. I think you were supposed to call on the phone.
All right, so I just got a call. Just a second. I just got a call. First, we got to talk tech here, because I just got a call that the levels of the incoming calls are low. So I'm trying to figure out
how. Okay, there's that. Now you say something.
You want me to say something?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm saying something. I feel really hard. I'm walking right through the street. It's really hard to hear you. Okay, this is better. Can you hear me?
Yeah, but it's really low for some reason.
Oh, you want me? Let me just go to my cubicle and call you. Should I just call the number on the website?
You know what it is? I had it.
Oh, you have it?
Yeah, I think
I did. I thought it might have been because I was down to one bar.
All right. This is going better, I think. I'm really sorry if I'm blasting people out here. But this is a learning process.
Are people listening right now?
Well, maybe. okay.
Oh, so, but in theory, they're supposed to be listening.
Mm-hmm.
So this is technically live?
This is live.
Oh, wow.
It's totally streaming right now. Your wife is probably
I
listening.
I thought you were like a screener or something.
Oh, yeah, right. I'm an intern.
Someone screen my call and like brief me and tell me what I'm supposed to say and what I'm not supposed to say.
Exactly.
And then connect me into the main room. No, actually, Amy's not. Amy, her baby yoga conflicted with this.
Oh.
She's having lunch right now with a bunch of other baby yoga people.
Oh, excellent.
Are you going to be able to archive this?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay.
So she'll be able to hear it. All right. So how'd your talk go this morning? tell people, I mean, I haven't explained what, so tell people if you want, as much as you want about your talk, but I want to hear how it went.
Oh, I did a financial aid talk, and it went, I guess, whatever, it went well. It's just a financial aid talk, it's really boring. So I'm really cynical about it, and I always think the students are really bored. So I don't do it just to get over with, but then I think I limit information, and then at the end I always feel like I should have included more, because really I designed the talk so it goes faster, so the students who I perceive would have very short attention spans won't start walking out of me. There's nothing more humiliating than when the students start walking out on you in the end, even though you tell them they shouldn't.
Well, I mean, as part of being a student, I think, and especially being a teenager.
I guess. I don't know. I don't know where they're all going. Like, they have appointments or something. But whatever, it doesn't matter. It's over. I only have to do a big one once a year. So that's fine. This is my once a year thing that I'm nervous about. I don't have really anything else to be nervous about in my life anymore, except for this talk.
Okay.
I have anxiety, but I don't have anything I feel nausea about.
Good.
So there's nothing that, like, any approaching thing where I experience nausea.
Okay.
Except for this talk.
Oh, it's giving you nausea?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
It's kind of like the way you feel, like, in the first day when you have to teach or something.
Yeah. It's giving me sweaty palms, but not nausea.
Really? I get it. Well, maybe it's just you know, React has different physiological expectations. But, no, also, too, like, the microphone, like, your voice sounds really weird in the microphone.
Yes.
I guess, I don't know if you've ever had to speak in front of people with a microphone.
Oh.
But it makes you feel really self-conscious about your voice, too.
Well,
kind of like talking on the phone, too.
I think the nature of giving talks, teaching, all those sorts of things is that there's always more that you could have said, and especially with something as deep and layered as financial aid.
you know, that's true.
You're always going to feel like there's more that you could have said.
Well, that's true, and it doubles not only as a staff loan information session, but as a general financial aid system. So I have to, layer the specific with the general.
Right.
So. I used to sound really that hard, actually. My job is so easy. Sometimes I can't believe they're paying me. I mean, I guess they're paying me because I'm really a laborer, but I can't believe they're paying me for my expertise.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice to have an occupation where you have very limited expertise, and then you can just kind of inform people on that expertise or carry out functions that require that limited expertise. So there's never any surprises.
I guess, so people should know that you're also a writer, so you don't carry home that that financial aid anxiety.
Yeah, that's
you.
True, that's
I mean,
true, yeah. So that's great about the job, because I rarely think about it. Actually, when I do bring home some kind of work-related conflict or pettiness that has happened during the day, I get really angry, because my job isn't supposed to be like that. That's why I do financial aid. And I always wonder how I could parlay this financial job into something else, and I can't ever figure out what I could do. So, yeah, so I'm thinking of parlaying writing into something. That's the idea, I guess.
Well, all right. I think that's a good idea, and as the week goes on, we can talk about what that leads into. But I want to ask you about your commute today.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
How'd you get to work?
It was good. You know, I was going to do kind of my regular commute, because I didn't want to do any kind of special commute to just talk about it, but I ended up doing my second commute, my second most favorite commute, which is taking the Brooklyn Bridge.
So you rode your bicycle.
Yeah, I didn't walk.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I ride my bicycle. So I rode my bicycle from Greenpoint through Williamsburg, through the edges of Fort Greene. Over there by that whole back way that Mark takes us on, under the BQE. And then I guess it's the outskirts of downtown Brooklyn in Brooklyn Heights, where the Brooklyn Bridge is. And then I take that into the city.
So why do you go that far, I guess, is it south? Why don't you go across the Williamsburg?
Well, part of it is just variety, but the other part is just that the Brooklyn Bridge is a little bit... not as physically taxing going over the bridge.
Uh-huh.
Not that going over the Williamsburg Bridge is that difficult, but it's shorter, it's smoother. I don't know. I like it. The view is better.
Mm-hmm.
There's Williamsburg Bridge has construction. You kind of riding through a construction site. I mean, I don't know. So it's prettier on the Brooklyn Bridge. And also I like, and then I also like kind of riding through Lower Manhattan. It's nice too. Lower Manhattan is nice.
Right.
A little bit more abandoned. So there's more clean air. Not clean air, but clear space.
I had a friend who used to ride her bike in, and she said she liked, like, being able to see what she was going into every day. Like, so now I'm entering, you know, this. Like, it's like you're going into another planet or something. You get sort of, that maybe doesn't happen when you're on the subway or...
Yeah, no, it's really nice. Like, one day I came in on the Brooklyn Bridge, and I could see the Empire State Building from that angle, and then I rode down to the Battery, and then I rode back up on the bike path that goes on the west side. And then I was coming through Chelsea, and I just stopped at a stoplight, and then all of a sudden I was like, oh, there's the other side of the Empire State Building. And I was thinking, oh, my God, I just saw this stuff in the morning, and, you know, I didn't even think about it. But it was nice. I like doing that. I like doing things before work, because work is so tedious that I like the feeling that I actually did something in the morning for myself before I go to work. I think it would be really depressing if I just got up and went straight to work. So I like doing something before I go to work, whether it's a walk or I do the bike ride. Also, the bike ride is great, too, because I get exercise. I don't like doing any kind of organized exercise. So it's good, and I save time. When I do my shortest route, I can go home in a half hour. So I'm actually saving time, and I'm becoming more physically fit.
Yeah.
So that's why I like cycling. That's
well, really I find you totally inspiring in that way. I like the idea of doing something before going to work, but it's like such a... It's such a commitment to do something so big that early in the morning, especially, I mean, you're there at 9, so, and then you write also in the morning sometimes, too.
Yeah, I think, well, I don't know, the thing is, doing something in the morning, it's easier to do something in the morning when you can just sit down in your cubicle and just kind of start off where you left off the day before, whereas if you're teaching or something, you can't really do that because you're probably preparing or something. I wouldn't, also too, I'd be so stressed out about teaching, I wouldn't be able to prepare the night before and then just do my thing in the morning. I would have to, like, double check everything I had prepared the night before. So I guess it's the kind of job I have too, because I have just a, kind of a, you know, repetitive, not entirely mindless, but mindless enough job that it's really easy to do stuff in the morning. I really like the morning too, because it's quiet.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a gorgeous day today, too. So talk about, like, what the city feels like right now. I mean, it's August. People are, at least in my head, they're away. There's security stuff starting to happen. Like, what are you seeing?
Yeah, you know, it's, well, you know, FIT, it's Freshman Orientation Week, so it actually feels more autumnal here, especially too, in that it's cooler now.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually feels like a transition to fall. Whereas, you know, I'm kind of disappointed because we didn't really pay our dues in the summer or autumn yet. You know, it's like we didn't have any really like weeks of miserable, humid 90-degree weather. You know, we only had a few 90-degree or, you know, above 90-degree days. So I don't know, but I'm happy. It's starting to get like, you know, it's darker now. I like it when it gets darker in the evening because I don't feel like I have to go out and do something. I can stay in. And then also, too, you know, it's, you know, the Republican National Convention is right around the corner. So they're, as they say, I guess, ramping up for the convention, and, you know, FIT is, the building where I work is going to be some kind of NYPD command center.
Uh-huh.
So, starting to see people you don't normally see, and, like, plainclothes cops and stuff like that, so that's what's happening over at FIT. And I don't really see much of what's going on over by the garden. They built this bridge. I don't know if you heard about what they're doing for security there.
Mark told me he saw that sort of in progress a little bit, but no, tell me what's going on. He told me...
Well, it's just a bridge that, you know, goes across 33rd Street and 8th Avenue,
mm-hmm.
and I think you're going to, I'm not sure, but I think you're going to enter, they'll have people entering over in the 9th Avenue or closer to 9th Avenue, and then you go through this kind of gauntlet that's also a pedestrian bridge, and then they're going to be putting up some kind of like big barrier around it or something. I know they have those things where there's like steel things where you can't drive through them.
Uh-huh.
I think they're going to put those up. But it's interesting because they're closing off a lot of the streets. Like, you know, on the FIT website, they have all the streets are going to close off too. So actually, I wonder what it, you know, these freshmen feel like seeing all this stuff, because going to school is, you know, kind of I guess nerve-wracking enough for them. But then, like, you talk to all these parents and they think their kids are going to get blown up or gassed.
How, like what are, do you have any idea, like, how many kids at FIT are from the New York area, or, like, percentage-wise? I just assume that it's a lot, but it's not.
Yeah, you'll have to interview Amy about that one.
Oh, right.
Like, she's the admissions expert. I don't really know. I think they're, I think they're trying to get more kids from New York City area, but I think actually since, and I have no statistics to back this up, but just from what I've seen in financial aid, it seems that there are more people outside of the city who are a little bit more affluent who are kind of taking advantage of SUNY tuition.
Right.
Even because out-of-state tuition is still even a good deal. I mean, you know, comparatively to in-state tuition.
Right.
But, so I don't really know. There are a lot of New York City kids who come here, but I think, I don't know. So I guess it's totally inconclusive answer.
All right. Well, you interview Amy tonight, and we can talk about it tomorrow.
Okay. All right. I also have people ask me admissions questions all the time, and I never know them. And then I can't call to admissions anymore because she's home.
You're right.
But my spy. I don't have my operative in there.
Sorry.
I missed my operative.
You
don't. I can't call her into her office anymore. I call her on the cell phone and worry about using up cell phone minutes.
Right. Oh, well, you don't really have to interview her. You can go home and talk about things that are not that.
What?
You don't really have to interview her. When you go home, you can, you know, whatever. You can talk about at home things.
Oh, at home things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like that beautiful baby, Leo.
I know. Yeah, we do talk about him. We catch up. But there's not enough, like, there's too much tag teaming going on. There's not enough Amy Wade time. So we sometimes catch up.
Yeah.
Over, like, a salad or something. But there's not much catching up.
Yeah.
So, do you have any kind of, like, command center set up over there? Like, this radio
I do. I'm in what is soon to be Doug's room. Mark built out part of it more with Tom. And so it's this big, beautiful, empty room that I've got my table opened up on, and this glorious tablecloth that Ulrika sent me for my birthday spread out on it. So it's really cheery.
Uh-huh.
And, it's my little command center. There's all sorts of plugs. This is, like, you know, I'm kind of all wired up. I look like probably I'm on a heart monitor or something, but through my ear.
Good. So you have a headset.
Yeah, I have every kind of set.
Yeah, headsets are great. I mean, before, like, people really walked around with those hands-free sets, to see a headset, someone wearing a headset, was really impressive.
Yeah.
But now it's become more pedestrian to people with headsets. There's all kinds of headsets. And, you know, people wear them, you know, completely unselfconscious manner.
Oh, totally.
It's amazing to see people with headsets. You know, you see people like people who work on films would wear headsets.
Yeah.
You know,
Madonna wore a headset. That's what I always like Madonna.
Right.
Like a Vogue tour or something, like the
headset. Did she just get, like, really physically fit or something that time?
I imagine. Something like that. But now, yeah, I've joined the headset thing, like, you know, since the baby, like, my office hours to call friends and family is when I walk the dog or I'm in the car. Like, that's the time. So I'm of the headset also.
So it's very convenient having the headset on, and you can do stuff, and you can even birth the baby while your headset
All right, well, I'm going to give Ulrika a call in London to check the weather out there and hear how she and Martin are doing, what's up in their garden. So.
Okay. Oh, they have a garden?
They do. Well, they have sort of an elaborate, what do you call it, balcony thing. And, but then they also garden a friend's yard because he just didn't do anything to it. So Martin's actually an amazing green thumb he used to have in their old flat. It was just like amazing garden. Wade, you would have loved it. So he
ask her what she does for weeds or what he does for weeds.
All right. What do you mean? Like pulling them?
No, like how you prevent them from growing.
Okay, I'll ask him.
Like a friend of mine told me you put thick layers of mulch. So you like suffocate it. So that would be my suggestion.
Okay.
And I want another suggestion. And say hello.
I will.
And have fun.
Yeah.
I'm so envious. How long are you going to be on the horn with London?
I don't know. Depends on how chatty they're feeling, I guess.
Do you get to do low price internet long distance?
No, I need to get a phone card is what I need to do. But no, right now it's all just. It's all just on, you know, the regular old thing. I imagine if I was more savvy than I am, there might be some way to do it over the internet, but I don't know how to do that yet.
Yes, exactly. You haven't conquered the world yet.
Oh, my God. Wait, getting to this point is a major victory won. I had no idea like what it would take to get here, and there were some dark hours where we all thought that this really wasn't going to happen. Meaning you and me talking over the internet.
Oh yeah, like lots like whiskey, whiskey pornography. Just late night bad TV. Those were kind of like that kind of dark night.
I wish. But it was that romantic, but it was more like...
Yeah, it was happening. I mean, the truth is kind of really abstract. I guess I'll have to listen to the archive.
Yeah.
And be absolutely mortified.
Yeah,
and,
well...
think about it for weeks. And
you can listen from your cubicle. You just can't listen to yourself because you're talking. So you can listen from your cubicle.
I don't have a sound card in my...
You don't have QuickTime Player or anything like that? You need QuickTime...
Exactly. Actually, I wish I had connection to the internet radio and all that stuff because I would listen to that all the time. I get sick of listening to NPR and I really it's like NPR, BAI, and KCR. That's all I listen to.
Yeah.
Or I could listen to like right wing radio. Sometimes I listen to.
They hear what's going on. Yeah.
It's true. I like listening to that.
Yeah.
It's fun. I mean, it's kind of fun, like, listening to that in religious radio, because it's like, they always have the answer. Like, there's something comforting listening to people who always have the answer.
Totally. Makes you feel like a kid again.
Yeah, exactly. I wish I were a kid again. No, I totally don't wish I were a kid again. Okay, well, so listen, I'm sorry to keep on going. I mean, you know, now I'm doing exactly what my mother does to me when I tell her I have to go. I say, Ma, I have to go, and then she says, I called your sister yesterday.
I do that to my parents. They don't do it to me, I do it to them.
Oh, really? Oh, that's nice. No, it's not, you know, I like talking to my mother, but there's certain times I just have to go, you know.
No, absolutely.
Cook up things or something.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much, Wade. I'm glad that you survived your talk, and I hope
so. So when are we doing this again? Is this a one-time deal?
No, it's every day, buddy.
Oh, well,
it's every day. We got 8 days. We're going through the first.
That's good too. Because it's good because I go to this Italian bakery, Diudo's.
Mm-hmm.
And I can report whether or not Diudo's is going to be included within the Republican National Convention compound.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a block or two away from the garden, so I don't know if they're going to fence them in or not.
No, definitely. Yeah, let us know, like, how it affects your commute and just what types of vehicles, like, what kinds of traffic you see and what you see.
Yeah, maybe I'll change my route. Maybe I'll go across the 59th Street Bridge. And come down and see and pretend that's the only way I can go and see where they send me.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
I can say hello to Martin and Alorca.
Okay. Well, and you say home to say hello to everyone at home.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, Wade.
All right.
So I'm sitting here with coffee, grapes, and a glass of water trying to keep sugar levels, caffeine levels up.
Hello.
Ulrika.
Oh, it's Ulrika.
What's your favorite radio station?
It's Free Erica. Good point.
We're sending you on a celebrity cruise with Cirque du Soleil.
Oh, with
which celebrity would you like to go? You've got the choice of three.
Male or female?
Yes, you can, and you can choose from our website. You can choose your celebrity to join.
From what website?
From our website, www.radiofreeerica.net.
Oh, right. So there's a list of choices.
Yeah, right. We'll just pretend that there are.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I'd like my first choice, or in first place, would be Mr. Clive Owen. Star of the crap film Arthur, but still a very hunky man. My second choice would be, I don't know, you.
right.
Please, I'd like to go with you on a celebrity cruise.
I can't believe that I'm your second choice.
Well, first female, then.
Right, this is true.
And third one, I don't know. Willem Dafoe, maybe.
Very nice. Well, how's everything going?
Everything's going great. And I just have to tell you that the fabulous tablecloth that you sent me for my birthday, what do I call this? My home base, my console. It is covering the table and keeping me in a cheery mood.
Very nice. I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, it's awesome. So,
yeah. And the little apron for Doug.
Well, it's really nice. But he's far away because otherwise I wouldn't be able to do this. But he's with Grandma.
Oh, right. Okay. So where are you right now? I'm trying to picture this.
I'm in his room.
All right, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got your whole setup there.
I've got the whole setup in here because the room's empty right now. We did some remodeling in it. And our friend Tom.
Right.
And so it's not finished yet.
Right.
So right now it is station headquarters.
All right. You sound very different. You've got a very sexy kind of breathy voice right now.
Oh, that's because I have a cold.
Oh, right.
And, and there's all sorts of drywall dust in here, too, so.
Oh, right. I thought you were able to just put it on, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I've been practicing.
This is a completely new experience for me. I think I've got to stand up rather than sit down now.
You're going to change me to your first choice now?
you move up immediately. I'm Clive Owen, Erica, on the celebrity cruise. Well, I've been trying to tune in.
Uh-huh.
I sent you an email this morning.
I wrote you back, but...
Right. Oh, I haven't checked it yet. Do I need broadband, then?
I don't know that you need broadband, but you need, like, iTunes or QuickTime Player.
All right. Okay. I've got those, then.
So you can go to that listing, and it should open... It should open in that program for
right.
you.
Uh-huh.
If it doesn't, you can open the program.
Yeah.
And then, like in the advanced setting, it says open URL, and you can type the URL in there.
You
should be able to find the URL by when you roll over the Listen Now link. It'll show you on the bottom of your browser what URL it's going to connect to.
Uh-huh.
And so you could type that in.
All right, okay. Well, I have another look again, then.
Okay.
Well, are we live on air?
We are live on air.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This is just a regular chat, so I better, you know, sort of think about what I'm saying.
That's right, in delay.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so my first question is, what's the weather there? I mean, it's... time and weather, please.
All right. Right now, the time is, let me think.
I should say.
I'm in London time. It's 2:02 in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And the weather is pretty crappy, actually. It's been a mixture of sunshine and showers, and right now the sky's looking really grey, and it's been just raining on and off, and we had a big thunderstorm earlier this afternoon, and then suddenly the sun burst through again, so it's rather unpredictable, and not very summery, and not very warm, but everybody is getting very frustrated here.
Because it's been for a long time.
Well, yeah, we've had a bit of, we had a spell of really good weather at the beginning of August. It was gorgeous and started to get really hot again, and it was just wonderful. And then that stayed for about, on and off for about 2 weeks, and then since last week it's just been raining and, you know, it's been pretty dull, actually. So chances of us getting a good summer are pretty small now.
Right.
Because by the end of August, you know, forget it, you know. So, that's London weather for you, you know.
Last year you guys got our summer for sure.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, on Mondays and Wednesdays when I go to work, when I go and teach, what they do here, I don't know if you get that in New York as well, there's a free newspaper, and they tend to put that on the underground and the buses.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called Metro. And they always have a weather forecast in there, and they also tell you the weather, or rather the temperatures, in major cities all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I always check out New York, and from what I can gather from the news, from what they've printed there, it hasn't been that brilliant over there either, has it?
Well, funny you should say that, because I was just talking to Wade,
yeah.
And he says hello, and he has
Wade.
he has a question about weeds for Martin, and I'm saying that now so I don't forget.
Right. Okay. Martin's just popped out to the off license.
Okay.
Some beers.
Okay.
He'll be back in 5 minutes.
Okay.
In a few minutes.
So when he comes back, we'll ask him the weed question.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, he's coming through the door now. I think I can hear him. He's been gardening just this Saturday, so he can probably tell you what's growing and what's not growing right now.
Okay. Well, but Wade was just complaining about how it doesn't feel like we've earned fall yet, because commenting that it doesn't feel that we've earned fall yet because we
what
haven't.
What a weird expression, earned fall.
Well, like, I think that's probably my words, but we haven't paid for it yet, like in enough blistering hot weather.
Right, yeah. Now that's a good way of putting it, yeah.
Yeah. But, so, his question about weeds, or should I wait until he gets on?
Sorry, about weeds?
Yeah.
The one that grows in the
yeah,
I'm sure you can answer that.
All sorts of them.
Well, shall I hand you over?
Okay.
Yeah.
Or you don't have two phones, like my parents? I can't talk to you on two phones?
No, not really.
Okay.
It's Europe with very basic technology here. We can't speak simultaneously, so I don't think we can. I've never tried it.
Well, Ulrika, you better move the rock back in front of the entrance into the cave now that Martin's home.
Yeah, and I'm going to go out in a minute and wash my fur.
Okay. Yeah,
Martin's just come back from hunting down some booze.
Excellent.
All right, well, I hand you over, and if you have another question, then he hands you over back to me.
Okay, but
all right,
we need to have a real talk soon.
Exactly.
A girlfriend chat.
Exactly, that would be very nice. So let me hand you over to the man.
Okay.
Hang on.
Oh, right. Hello.
Hey, Martin.
Hello there.
Welcome to RadioFreeErica.net.
Oh, right.
So,
I feel honored.
Hey, so what'd you get at the off-license? What are you drinking tonight?
A bottle of Dragon Stout.
Oh, wow.
Which is a Jamaican kind of beer.
Mm.
Very nice. A little bit for the sweet tooth, I think. I think I've got Jamaican taste buds.
Uh-huh.
I've not got quite Jamaican soul, but Jamaican taste buds. And a couple of cans of Beck's.
Excellent. And so I was just talking to Wade a little bit ago, and he has a question for you about weeds in the garden.
All right.
He wants to know if you do anything to manage them. Like he said, someone had told him to layer lots of mulch, so it kind of chokes them out. Have you heard that, or do you do anything to manage them besides pull?
Besides what? Pulp?
But pulling them, you know?
Pulling them. Oh, right, pulling them. Sorry. No, mainly just pulling them.
Right.
I think on the lawn, I do use weed killer,
because
it gets a bit much to try and dig out everything as much of grass. But,
right.
Everywhere else, I tend to dig them out. I think it's just basically fine. The best thing is try and get them out by the roots.
Right.
But it's more kind of a labour-intensive thing over years, just to make sure you know, year by year, you notice the benefits of it, I think.
Right.
You know, I haven't heard of mulch. I haven't tried anything clever like that.
All right, so we'll have to keep that one going around, see if I'll let you know if we hear of any other preventatives.
I think most of my learning by experience gardening is all quite labour-intensive.
Right.
So I grow them with love rather than skill, I think.
That's a nice way of putting it. So what is growing these days?
What's growing? Well, it depends which garden or area you're looking at, because I've got the garden at work, which is like four houses.
Oh, I didn't know yet.
Yeah, I've turned into the gardener at work.
When
I'm not in the office there. I've got the balconies here, which have, I think, counted about 70 plants here, and then there's all the rest of my garden over at Nat's place.
Well, let's talk about one of them, and then I'll call another day, and we'll talk about a different one. Let's talk about the one at work, because that's pretty cool. And just what it is. For people who don't know, like, where you work and...
Oh, right. Well, you want the full Monty on it?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, I work in Islington in London. Do you want all that?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Sorry, my assistant's laughing at me. I work in Islington, London, which is just about 20 minutes walk from where we live now. And I can walk along the canal in the mornings. And it's just over the road from a place called Angel, which is quite close to the centre of London. And work is, it's a residential home for 20 clients who've got a history of homelessness and they're mentally ill. And it's actually the actual residence is four houses, which is a Georgian block. And it's actually, used to be a plaque out the back which said it was actually built in 1814. So it's almost 200 years old now, the houses. And it's got a lot of nice character, which means that basically I've got four houses worth of garden back and front to play around with. We used to have a volunteer there. A lady used to come and work the gardens there, but she's kind of faded off the scene, and it got quite derelict about 4 or 5 years ago. So bit by bit, I ended up taking on the role of gardener as well as being deputy manager of the project. It's very green, but for me it lacked a bit of colour, and I think one or two residents said they wanted a bit more colour. There's not much money available, so I do have to be quite careful economically each year what I buy, but I found I started off a couple of years, just bought a lot of bulbs, quite cheap, kind of mail order, and with a bit of kind of work and effort, using troughs and pots, grew them from bulb, and so that added quite a lot more colour around the project. I think the lady who was here disapproves a bit. I think she likes more subtle kind of blues or shades of blue without the sun and white. I don't think she really approves of my splashes of colour around the place. She always comes and complains about the fact I haven't cut the holly bushes properly and never actually makes any comment about the fact that someone's working quite hard to keep the place in good nick.
Yeah, and who is this?
Oh, it's a woman. Well, she used to be a volunteer. She used to live up the road, but I think she's moved out to the countryside somewhere, but she comes and visits occasionally. And I don't know, but Rod, who's the manager, says whenever she walks past, she looks very disapproving of the garden.
Ah.
So that's a bit annoying. I know different gardens have different styles and go for different kind of ways of, I suppose, designing a garden using colour and texture. But I think, I thought she might appreciate the fact that someone actually's taken an interest in it and it's only been quite derelict, but... more just complains about what I don't do rather than what I do.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Hmm.
Sad.
Yeah.
You know, that, like, that's where you choose to put your complaining.
Yeah, yeah. So what else do you want to know?
Well, I want to know, so are you, you're the only person laboring out there, or are you, are some of the residents working with you, or?
Well, they tend to watch me quite a bit.
Supervised.
Yeah, they chat to me when I'm out there.
Uh-huh.
I think because I don't tend to make it a kind of work camp, but
right.
we do get, they do activities, and that's required of them as part of the contract living there.
Right.
And so they do keep up with that, and I think they more just enjoy lolling in the garden and just enjoying the sunshine. And but it's nice. I find it's quite nice. It gets me out of the office and out of a more formal role. So
right.
When I'm out in the garden, just digging away on my hands and knees, I suppose it's just a bit more informal, really.
What is the resident turnover like? Like, do you ever have people come in who, you know, like, for example, if I was there, I'd be interested in, like, the visual art activities or whatever. Have you ever had people that have come in that have been interested, have been sort of like your garden, I don't know, someone who's taken a specific interest in it, or...
How do you mean from the residents' point of view?
Yeah, from the residents' point of view, I guess.
What, in the garden?
Yeah.
Not really, no. I think there's one guy who actually used to look gardening elsewhere. I think he wore him out, so he just kind of chat with me when I was in the garden outside. Yeah, there hasn't been anybody over the years who's been that keen on gardening.
I didn't find that surprising, but
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. I think sometimes as well, that the kind of, I think because of the medication a lot of people are on,
mm-hmm.
One of the side effects often is not just lack of motivation, but lack of energy.
Right.
So physically, it's more more difficult for them maybe sometimes. But, I think sometimes as well. I mean, one of the difficulties is I think with people who've got in the mental health system. I don't know how it is in America, so much as here. But I think once they've got in the mental health system for a while, it is quite disabling in itself. They're on kind of, you know, benefits and welfare. And I think, I mean, that's the tide we're trying to turn, and I suppose in our project and a lot of other places now, is trying to turn that sense that they're just, in a sense, jettisoned by society.
Right.
And they're, the kind of sense of disability is almost labelled onto them and layered onto them until they feel as though they aren't of much use. There's a kind of lot of failure layered onto them.
Right.
And there's a lot, yeah, there's a lot of lethargy. You're often trying to kind of help people move themselves on. You're dealing with a lot of inertia. And it's just those kind of years in hospitals and in hospitals, just sat around with not too much to do. And it's just trying to build some momentum from that. I suppose if I was a better group leader as well, I might kind of make it a bit more... I think you find it difficult to lead gardening.
Right.
Because in some ways it's... I think the other side of it I thought about is actually it's very... grueling gardening.
Yes.
I think you have to have kind of touched the magic.
Yes.
But it can take a while before the magic appears.
Yes.
And a lot of it is just hard labour.
Yes.
You know, mostly what you talk about gardening is weeding, it's digging, it's getting dirty.
Yeah.
It's going out in the cold and the wet and all weathers and just whatever the day's fair. And yeah, when I kind of, people ask me, oh, when I do something, well, that has happened. People have asked, can I do something? And I can, oh, we'll water that bit. And you see their interest disappears pretty quickly.
Right.
Because I suppose because, you know, you don't have something burst out into flower in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's other pastimes you can do where you actually can visually, as you're doing it, see something happen.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps if you paint, for instance, you visually see the colours go on to the,
right.
the canvas. You can see the images start to form straight away. Whereas gardening, you plant everything, you've got to wait weeks for anything to happen.
Mm-hmm. And then maybe it dies and it doesn't happen.
Yeah. So, I think for myself, you know, I can think back to the first... I think once you get the magic of it, then it's all worthwhile. And you can start to visualise what is going to happen. And then, you take a pride in the kind of garden that's fairly neat as well. You know, I can look at a garden after a day, you know, 4 or 5 hours weeding and think, oh, that looks brilliant, whereas someone else will walk past and think nothing's happened. You know, I can see the difference after 5 hours weeding, how
right,
an area looks completely different.
Yes.
To me, but probably the residents don't know much difference.
Yes.
So, I suppose in the end, people recognise the overall, they recognise plants coming out and the fact it looks nice and there's lots of colour and, you know, everything is overgrown.
There's a place, I don't think I told you about it when you guys came, when we met you at my folks, maybe, I don't remember, I was, anyway, it's around, it's not far from them. They actually, their property shares a border with this place called Growing Grounds, which it's like I don't know, maybe it's like 5 acres or something, but it's, they grow vegetables and I don't know if they grow, what else they grow, but it's a similar sort of like rehabilitation, like mental health people who are working there and managing it. I wonder if like maybe growing vegetables or something, having some sort of prize. I mean, then they sell those also because they grow them organic and there's a small kind of market for it within the town. But it's just kind of interesting, and I was kind of upset that I hadn't thought of that when you were out there because it seemed like a perfect thing for us to go visit.
Maybe next time.
Yeah, exactly. Something for next time.
Yeah. Well, no, I've never got too much into vegetable growing, funnily enough. I did grow some tomatoes at the project.
Mm.
People seemed quite chuffed when they kind of started to sprout. That's one guy particularly used to come carrying them in the office for me and keeping an eye on what's growing. I think also within the organisation there is a kind of group run called Putting Down Roots. I think that they're kind of group leading some gardening projects.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're talking about a pool of residents from or clients from all around some Mungo, so you've got several hundred potential people, so you're more likely to find some enthusiasts for something. I think a lot of residents are more into, I mean, they're often more interested in things like computing.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose the other thing we're promoting is more practical skills, like being able to cook for themselves.
Right.
And stuff, so I suppose it's a bit more, on a kind of survival basis, is the more relevant than the...
No, absolutely. It's interesting also just, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it's the thing you do to relax and they're together but separate in terms of your work and it's...
Well, I think it's really nice. I just say that it can become part of my work. Like I can work in the office for a while or I can spend a day on the weekend just down there gardening.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of see it in some ways. So I don't want to get into kind of forcing on and trying to push other people into doing it. It's my contribution towards the environment. And we kind of expect the residents and clients themselves. I mean, we do challenge them in terms of, you know, making an effort to keep their environment clean, keep their rooms clean, keep the inside of the building clean. And we've got different parts of the project, and half of the residents in the hostel section, which is slightly more higher care. But then the other half, there's 5 men in a men's shared house and 5 women in a women's shared house. And we do expect them, the cleaner doesn't work in there, so we do expect them to keep their environment clean. So we're kind of, you know, they do have their tasks at the weekend, so I see it in some ways as my contribution towards the whole environment. We kind of expect them to put that effort in to keep their immediate environment. And I think it's also about a bit of role modelling. You know, I think it's good if staff are seen to be physically active, just not pushing pens and playing the computers in the office. It's that kind of role modelling thing of, you know, we expect them to,
right.
I suppose, take some, not just pride in their environment, but I suppose respect for themselves by respecting their environment. So if I can show that, you know, I've got a kind of desire that goes beyond just
showing
up, paid for the work, but I like to, you know, I work in this place and I want to keep, you know, have a nice garden.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of garden around the place, and it's, you know, also keeping the front. And there's another aspect as well that the Mungos does try and have a kind of good neighbour policy. We are in quite a kind of, such a gentrified area that the housing's of quite good quality around there. So we won't make many friends if we've got an old building that looks very grotty and derelict out of
the it sounds like you're already not making friends with that lady. I mean, I don't know. It's like...
Well, you can't please everyone.
No, exactly. That's for sure. I can't...
Well, I've plenty of other people going past commenting if I'm working out. They're commenting on the colour and saying it's nice.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I feel like that, like, and it's always like that one person who's complaining that you then end up giving your energy to. Like, why are they complaining?
Oh, I even just walk away. Well, I kind of avoid her, and if she comes, if she's not there, I just keep still and don't get in an argument. But as I say, it's more about her ownership of it, I think. You know, it was her garden, I suppose, and she was kind of. I tend to think that whatever anybody else has done, it probably wouldn't be right.
Yeah. The personality.
Yeah.
Well,
I'd be only too happy to pull their holly bushes out of the ground because I get fed up with them pricking their hands whenever I'm working around them. But I think that might be a bit too much.
Yeah. Today I jammed my hand on a rose bush. I didn't know what I had run into. It was like so surprising. I was like, why do I hurt so badly right at this instant? And speaking of holly bush pulling out and pricking. Well, Martin, thanks so much. I'm going to call you then another day. I'll organize with you guys another day that'll work.
All right.
To hear about what's going on in the other gardens.
Well, the balcony's a good one because enough to look straight out on it. But you have to be quick because it won't be long before it's all going out of bloom.
Okay.
We've got a rather spectacular couple of dahlias outside here. One called Ludwig. that's the actual name of the. Not that we named it Ludwig, but that's the actual name of its. I don't know what you call them. It's not species, is it? Type. And the other's the Bishop of Hollandris.
They're very rich names.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. But they're quite spectacular at the moment. And good luck to Mark. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on radio. Sorry, I forgot the title of it.
You're allowed to say anything you want. It's the internet radio. You can say anything.
It starts tomorrow, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It opens tomorrow night.
All right, well, good luck to him.
Yeah.
It goes really well. Sounded good.
Yeah, thanks. And, I don't know, any last minute quick... any last minute comments on sort of just what the tone is? Like, are people talking about the Republican National Convention in London, or is it...
I just saw something on the there's something on the news earlier on about some campaign that they've run against Kerry and his war record, and
you
know, George W. Bush has said, "Oh, we should stop that now." But apparently they did make comment that, well, he's only decided to stop it once all the damage has been done.
Right.
So how are things running? What's the kind of what are the polls saying?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, part of doing this is to hear from everyone, like, what their perspectives are on what's going on, because it's kind of impossible, I feel, as an individual to manage all the information or any of it. But all I can say is that New York is, like, electric right now. At least the art world feels that way in terms of there's just so much energy being put together to get Bush out of office, in whatever ways people can participate. And it's really exciting, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
Well, I hope it works.
Yeah, I know. Me too. Well, kiss Ulrika for me and tell her I'll call her... Probably not later today, but so that we can have a proper girl chat.
Oh, right. Okay.
And then next time I call, also I'll ask her for some political outside insights.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Okay. Well, good to speak to you.
Yeah, good to speak to you, too.
Good luck with things.
Thank you.
Okay. And love the dove.
Yeah, thanks. All right. Speak to you soon, Martin.
Okay.
Okay, thanks so much.
No problem.
Bye.
Bye now.
All right, so last year we're going to call Mary Adams on the Lower East Side. She walks from Chelsea to her store every day. see what she's seen on her wall.
Hello, you've reached Mary Adams, 138 Ludlow Street. I'm open by appointment only, so be sure to call before you come down.
All right. It sounds as if Mary is on her other line, so we're not going to talk to Mary right now. But Mary works on the Lower East Side, and she was commenting today that she was going to pass right by the Carrie campaign. So I'm going to take this call, and perhaps it's her.
Hello, you're on Radio Free Erica.
Hey, it's John.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good. I just wanted to call you and tell you I'm listening. It sounds cool.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great.
I'm actually, I don't know if you're recording it, but I record it for you. So you have a copy of what it's
actually, yeah. I'm archiving it also, but that's good to have a double backup because I have a tendency to, you know, lose things.
Cool. Well, yeah, it sounds totally good. Even, I mean, the first one you did didn't sound good. But when you turned up the volume or whatever you did.
Fiddled with the knobs, I know.
Yeah.
I'm like trying to figure this all out. So
a thousand times better.
I guess I'll have to talk to Carla again since she was low. So what's going on in California? What's the weather? In San Luis.
It's the usual, gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
74 degrees. Little bit of clouds, but other than that, it's,
And so what's the buzz in San Luis Obispo on the convention? Any buzz?
I don't know. I get frustrated every time I drive around and see a Bush sticker on a bumper, but I think I see as many Kerry stickers here as I do Bush stickers, but there are a lot of Bush stickers in town, so it boggles me every time. How can
they
be so clueless, you know? But,
That's heartening that you see is equal representation on bumpers.
Yeah, it seems that way. I mean, you know, this is kind of it's still an ex-hippie town despite all the yuppies that have moved here, you know, it's still got that, the roots or whatever of, you know, a lot of students. Although it seems like, I don't know, it seems pretty Republican around here these days. I guess there's still some holdouts or whatever from the old days when it was cheap to live here. And,
yeah.
That, so.
You know, my dad, he told me that there's some peace marches happening and some things going on out there. So.
Oh, you know what I saw the other day? They're doing a... It's not a peace march. It's the I know they do them here, but it's a it's like a support the troops rally or something like that this weekend. So I'm assuming it's, you know, it should be interesting as to who shows up and exactly what they're doing. You know, I don't know, but it looked like kind of like a pro-war thing, but at the same time, it supports the troops, and I guess, you know, there's a difference between the two in a way, you know? People don't see that necessarily, but there is a big difference.
Yeah.
But I don't know what technology you're using to do the recording. How are you getting it from the phone into the computer?
Oh, I've got a preamp deal. I don't know if I'm using the right language, but I think that's it. And, so I've got my mic going through that into the computer, and then I've got a headset for the phone that also goes through the preamp.
Oh, okay.
So
it sounds really good. And considering it's a 24K stream, are you really on a dial-up?
No, I'm not, but I wanted it to be that so anybody can listen because, you know... I know a lot of people who are still on dial-up.
Yeah, well, it sounds... I mean, I'm on broadband, but it sounds really, like, perfect, you know, as far as the phone conversation goes.
That's excellent. That's great. So, hey, do you, as a landscape John's on the Central Coast in California, just for people who don't know. And
I was listening to that too. 3 inches of mulch will dramatically help your weed control.
So 3 inches,
like bark or monkey hair or wood chips. If you put that down about 3 inches thick.
Okay.
That'll control weed.
And is that because it blocks light?
Yeah, it blocks light. And the other thing it does too is it holds moisture into the ground, so you can actually water less because the moisture doesn't, you know, evaporate as quickly.
Okay.
Exciting gardening tip.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Can you hear Candy barking in the background?
I do. I do.
So I have that email too that I didn't send you yet. I know it's too late for that show, but I'll forward you John Knighty's paint and stuff, just so you guys can have it in case something comes up down the road.
Cool.
You got kids from the family from Iran. Remember, I took it down there.
Okay, well, cool.
I don't know if I was going to tell you, if you turn on your instant messenger, then I can, like,
I know. Right now, I know. I should turn that on right now. It's like all I can manage to watch the levels. But yeah, I'll do that.
Are you adjusting it?
Am I what?
Are you constantly adjusting the
levels? Kind of, because right now I'm hearing a lot. Well, I have a cold, so I hear my heavy breathing, and so I'm trying to figure out how to deal with that.
I don't hear it.
You don't hear it. Okay.
No. At least I don't recall hearing it.
Right.
On the radio. But all right, cool. Well, I'll back it up. And so you're just doing like what, 3 hours a day?
I'm doing 2 hours a day every day for the run of the show. So it'll maybe run longer sometimes, and then I'll run like old programming and then just ambient sounds and stuff. I'm gonna try and have stuff up 24/7 for the show, but like when I broadcast from the gallery, I'm gonna have to stop the broadcast here because I have to transport the laptop and stuff. So, so there'll be.
I was
going
to tell you too. I emailed you about the link on your webpage.
Uh huh.
I cut and pasted the HTML so you could see what needed to change, but the URL isn't complete. So if you click on Listen Now or Listen, yeah, I think it says Listen Now on the webpage, that won't open in iTunes.
Well, I had to get some, like, no IP I should talk to you about this. Maybe I'll call you later and talk to you about this. Because we had to get this special service because the IP is constantly changing.
Yeah.
So, we were still trying to figure out how to manage that. And then the service.
Work, but the problem is the actual link it needs to have the http://// in front of it.
Oh.
And it doesn't now.
Okay.
So basically, iTunes is saying, I don't know what audio dot, it doesn't know what it is.
Okay.
It doesn't realize it's a web page or I think that's what the problem is. I could be wrong, but because the other link, when you click on the Mac Streams page, if you look at that link, it has the.
It has all of that.
Yeah, it has the full IP address. But you can replace the IP address with the domain, but it still starts with http://.
Okay, I'm going to call you later and ask you more about this because we've been spending days trying to figure all this out, and if you have more ideas, that's great.
Okay, yeah.
Cool.
I'm happy to help.
All right, well.
I think I'm going to go back to art school and get my master's too, I decided.
You're going to go back to art school and get your master's?
Yeah, to art center, I think.
Art center, well.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm still going to look at other programs, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to go there just because of.
That's exciting.
To me and my love is LA, so. But I don't know. We'll see what happens next fall. Not this fall, but maybe next fall. My master plan.
Yeah, there's lots of exciting people teaching there now. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, they have a master's MFA in digital media.
Uh-huh.
What I think would be most appropriate and interesting for what I'm doing. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Well, anyway, cool. This is awesome. Congratulations on the radio show.
Thank
cool.
you so much. Yeah, it's exciting. All right. So, love to Lori, and thanks for calling.
Yeah, till very much. I said 7:30.
Okay, well,
And, yeah, just call me back if you want help with anything technical.
Yeah, thank you, and come visit.
Yeah, you know, I seriously am going to try and talk Lori into taking a week off in early fall and going to New York.
So. Yeah, it's really a great time to come.
That's what I've heard. So.
Yeah, it's really, that's the time. That and, like, late May.
Okay.
All right.
I'll stay in touch.
Okay, speak to you soon.
Talk to you.
Bye. All right, Mary, Mary, let's try again here.
Hello, you've reached Mary Adams.
All right. Well, Mary's maybe, I think maybe she's not ready to talk to me yet today. So, this has been a totally exciting first run of all of this. And Carla, I apologize that our levels were low when we talked. And I'm kind of spacing out right now because I'm watching the levels change from on the phone to not being on the phone, and I hear it differently. So I don't know if it sounds different or not outside of my headset. So basically, every day is going to be some version of today with sometimes being more, I mean, there really couldn't be more phone calls, but sometimes it'll be a lot of phone calls. Sometimes it'll be more artist interviews. I think Friday is going to be, like, full-on artist interviews from the gallery. And it's also open if people want to come and sign up for times at the gallery for the days I'm going to be there, which is going to be Friday, Sunday, and I think Monday of next week. You can sign up for times and just kind of chat down if you'd like. And really, I want this to be, I want it to be an open forum, as open as possible. So, and we've got people that we're going to call every day in different parts of the world to kind of get the weather, hear about what's growing. Martin is, by far the greenest of all of the people we'll be talking to in terms of he does a lot of gardening, but I just want to hear sort of what people are observing growing around them. It's actually, I told Martin that I ran into a rose bush today and I was out pulling some weeds and sort of what's growing. Like right now, the black-eyed Susans in our garden are going nuts, and we have no like elaborate garden by any means. But what's going nuts in our garden right now is the black-eyed Susans and the strawberries. It's really fun. The baby is so into picking the strawberries. He doesn't really understand that you're only supposed to pick the red ones yet, though. So he picks them all, and I pull the green ones out of his hands, and he eats the red ones, top and all. And the tomatoes are going nuts. The tomatoes are totally amazing. They're the best tasting tomatoes so far. So that's what's going on in our garden in terms of what's doing well and what's not doing well. The delphinium is just dead. The petunias in our window box have pretty much kicked the bucket. So that's what's what in our garden. So I've been kind of thinking that there's this there's an essay I want to read by Arundhati Roy, but I'm going to answer the phone first.
Hello, you're on Radio Free Erica.
Hi, I'm trying to contact Mark Lepson or Shorter Romero.
Okay. Which would you like to contact?
Either one. This is Jeffrey Uslip calling from the project, and we represent William Popel.
Oh, hi.
Hi, and he's in the Watch What We Say exhibition, and I need to sort of find out, you know, because I know this is sort of handled through William, and I just found out about this, so we need to sort of send a consignment form.
Oh, you have been sent a consignment form? Well, anyhow, hold on, I'm looking up the phone number at the gallery.
Nobody seemed to be there. Is it the 718-486-8992?
Yeah, that's the gallery number. Nobody's answering?
No.
Okay.
Would you be able to tell me about the work on view?
Yeah, he will. I know. You want to know the title of the piece?
I want to know. Yeah, the title first.
Bill is upset.
Bill is upset. The date?
I think it's 51 to 2004.
1951?
Yeah, I'm assuming it's the year he was born.
1951 to 2004. The medium?
It's a collage. Mixed media collage.
So mixed media collage. The size?
The size, I don't know specifically. I'm going to give you Mark's cell phone number.
Okay.
Okay. It's 917.
Okay.
623-0772.
623-0772. And was there a price set at the piece?
You know, I don't know the price either, so Mark would know that. I don't know anything about a price.
Do you have an image of the piece?
You'd have to ask him again.
Okay. I'll call Mark.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
That was funny. So let's try Mary one last time.
Hello, you've reached Mary Adams at one.
Mary really doesn't want to talk to me. It's far from Jesus. All right. So I'm going to read a little bit from this Arundhati Roy essay, and then I'm going to call it a day. Arundhati Roy is the author of The God of Small Things, the novel, and she's written two collections of essays that I have that are beautiful. One is called War Talk, and had loaned Mary the other one, so I don't have the title of it in front of me. She has another one as well. And this essay is called Come September. And she presented it as a lecture in Santa Fe, New Mexico in 2002. And she says, writers imagine that they cull stories from the world. I'm beginning to believe that vanity makes them think so, that it's actually the other way around. Stories cull writers from the world. Stories reveal themselves to us. The public narrative, the private narrative, they colonize us. They commission us. They insist on being told. Fiction and nonfiction are only different techniques of storytelling. For reasons I do not fully understand, fiction dances out of me. Nonfiction is wrenched out by the aching, broken world I wake up to every morning. The theme of much of what I write, fiction as well as nonfiction, is the relationship between power and powerlessness and the endless circular conflict they're engaged in. John Berger, that most wonderful writer, once wrote, "Never again will a single story be told as though it's the only one." There can never be a single story. There are only ways of seeing. So when I tell a story, I tell it not as an ideologue who wants to pit one absolutist ideology against another, but as a storyteller who wants to share her way of seeing. Though it might appear otherwise, my writing is not really about nations and histories. It's about power, about the paranoia and ruthlessness of power, about the physics of power. I believe that the accumulation of vast, unfettered power by a state or a country, a corporation or an institution, or even an individual, a spouse, friend, or sibling, regardless of ideology, results in excesses, such as the ones I will recount here. Living as I do, as millions of us do, in the shadow of the nuclear holocaust that the governments of India and Pakistan keep promising their brainwashed citizenry, in the global neighborhood of the war against terror, what President Bush rather biblically calls the task that does not end, I find myself thinking a great deal about the relationship between citizens and the state. In India, those of us who have expressed views on nuclear bombs, big dams, corporate globalization, and the rising threat of communal Hindu fascism, views that are at variance with the Indian governments, are branded anti-national. While this accusation does not fill me with indignation, it's not an accurate description of what I do or how I think. An anti-national is a person who is against her own nation and, by inference, is pro some other one. But it isn't necessary to be anti-national to be deeply suspicious of all nationalism, to be anti-nationalism. Nationalism of one kind or another was the cause of most of the genocide of the 20th century. Flags are bits of colored cloth that governments use first to shrink wrap people's minds and then as ceremonial shrouds to bury the dead. When independent thinking people, and here I do not include the corporate media, begin to rally under flags, when writers, painters, musicians, filmmakers suspend their judgment and blindly yoke their art to the service of the nation, it's time for all of us to sit up and worry. In India, we saw it happen soon after the nuclear tests in 1998 and during the Kargil War against Pakistan in 1999. In the U.S., we saw it during the Gulf War, and we see it now, during the war against terror, that blizzard of made-in-China American flags. Recently, those who have criticized the actions of the U.S. government, myself included, have been called anti-American. Anti-Americanism is in the process of being consecrated into an ideology. The term anti-American is usually used by the American establishment to discredit and, not falsely, but shall we say inaccurately, define its critics. Once someone is branded anti-American, the chances are that he or she will be judged before they are heard, and the argument will be lost in the welter of bruised national pride. What does the term anti-American mean? Does it mean you're anti-jazz? Or that you're opposed to free speech? That you don't delight in Toni Morrison or John Updike? That you have a quarrel against giant sequoias? Does it mean that you don't admire the hundreds of thousands of American citizens who marched against nuclear weapons, or the thousands of war resistors who forced their government to withdraw from Vietnam? Does it mean that you hate all Americans? This sly conflation of America's culture, music, literature, the breathtaking physical beauty of the land, the ordinary pleasures of ordinary people with criticism of the U.S. government's foreign policy, about which, thanks to America's free press, sadly, most Americans know very little, is a deliberate and extremely effective strategy. It's like a retreating army taking cover in a heavily populated city, hoping that the prospect of hitting civilian targets will deter enemy fire. There are many Americans who would be mortified to be associated with their government's policies. The most scholarly, scathing, incisive, hilarious critiques of the hypocrisy and the contradictions in the U.S. government policy come from American citizens. When the rest of the world wants to know what the U.S. government is up to, we turn to Noam Chomsky, Edward Said, Howard Zinn, Ed Herman, Amy Goodman, Michael Albert, Chalmers Johnson, William Blum, and Anthony Arno to tell us what's really going on. Similarly, in India, not hundreds but millions of us would be ashamed and offended if we were in any way implicated with the present Indian government's fascist policies, which, apart from the perpetration of state terrorism in the Valley of Kashmir, in the name of fighting terrorism, have also turned a blind eye to the recent state supervised pogrom against Muslims in Gujarat. It would be absurd to think that those who criticize the Indian government are anti-Indian, although the government itself never hesitates to take that line. It is dangerous to cede to the Indian government, or the American government, or anyone for that matter, the right to define what India or America ought to be. To call someone anti-American, indeed to be anti-American, or for that matter anti-Indian or anti-Timbuktuan, is not just racist, it's a failure of the imagination, an inability to see the world in terms other than those that the establishment has set out for you. If you're not a Bushy, you're not you're a Taliban. If you don't love us, you hate us. If you're not good, you're evil. If you're not with us, you're with the terrorists. Last year, like many others, I too made the mistake of scoffing at the post-September 11th rhetoric, dismissing it as foolish and arrogant. I realized that it's not foolish at all. It's actually a canny recruitment drive for a misconceived dangerous war. Every day I'm taken aback at how many people believe that opposing the war in Afghanistan amounts to supporting terrorism or voting for the Taliban. Now that the initial aim of the war, capturing Osama bin Laden, dead or alive, seems to have run into bad weather, the goalposts have been moved. It's being made out that the whole point of the war was to topple the Taliban regime and liberate Afghan women from their burqas. We're being asked to believe that the U.S. Marines are actually on a feminist mission. If so, will their next stop be America's military ally, Saudi Arabia? Think of it this way. In India, there are some pretty reprehensible social practices against untouchables, against Christians and Muslims, against women. Pakistan and Bangladesh have even worse ways of dealing with minority communities and women. Should they be bombed? Should Delhi, Islamabad, and Dhaka be destroyed? Is it possible to bomb bigotry out of India? Can we bomb our way to a feminist paradise? Is that how women won the vote in the United States, or how slavery was abolished? Can we win redress for the genocide of the millions of Native Americans upon whose corpses the United States was founded by bombing Santa Fe? Okay, I'm going to stop here and thank everybody for listening. I'll continue reading more of that essay. Next time there's some free airtime, which probably means tomorrow. And again, I want to thank everyone who helped make this happen, Mark, for curating the Watch What We Say exhibition, which opens tomorrow night at Schroeder Romero Gallery in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, 173A North 3rd, just off of Bedford Avenue. Come celebrate the opening with us. There's so many amazing artists and pieces in the show. We'll be talking to hopefully most of the artists during the week of this broadcast. I want to thank Xenia for tirelessly working on getting the technical parts of this running. Diane and Tom for cheerleading and testing. And Carol for watching the baby so that I can be doing this. I also just wanted to note there are so many things coming past me. I'm looking here for an announcement for an exhibition that's opening tonight. Ambush exhibition. The official opening is tonight from 6 to 9 p.m. tonight, Tuesday the 24th, with a dance party to follow, and it's at the Vant Brunt Gallery in Manhattan at 819 Washington Street between Gansevoort and West 12th Street, and there's a very long list of artists that are participating. Access of Eve, Melanie Baker, Lisa Blatt, Enrique Chagoya, Rutherford Chang, Paul Klein, Tom Carell, Critical Art Ensemble, R. Crumb, Rodney Dixon, Elise Engler, and so it's all alphabetical, and I just happened to hit the first few names, but the list is at least five times as long. The late Leon Golub is in there as well, DJ Spooky. So it sounds like a great and worthy event. And if you know of any events that you want me to announce on the radio, please let me know via email or phone. And thank you all so much for listening and helping make this happen. So I'm going to go get the white noise machine, and I'll be broadcasting some white noise. I'll rebroadcast today's program probably later tonight. If you want to know the exact times, you can email me, and I'll let you know. Peace and love to all of you. And bye-bye.